Listener Production.
Australia Today. Honest opinion, real talk.
It's Tuesday, December the 13th, 12 days out from Christmas, and Australia, I must say, is in shock this morning with six people, including two police officers in their 20s, dead after a gunfight in Western Queensland. Steve Price with you, full coverage as this brutal police slaying is still unfolding on a property at a place called Weambilla near Chinchilla. Chillingly, the Australian newspaper and other media is now reporting that the 29-year-old male police officer and his 26-year-old police partner were first wounded around 4:40 yesterday afternoon, Queensland time, and then stood over and executed with the gunman wearing camouflage. Police had attended the property on a missing persons inquiry. More detail on that in a moment. Incredibly, a third officer, 1 week out of the police academy, was able to escape into the bush armed with a radio to raise the alarm. The dead offenders tried to smoke her out by setting fire to the surrounding bush. This is a major police operation now, and our thoughts, of course, are with the families of those police officers. They have now been identified. And when you watch or when you look at the photographs of these two just going about their normal day job, it just breaks your heart. Constable Rachel McCrow, 26, and Constable Matthew Arnold, 29, murdered in cold blood. The two men killed in the firefight were brothers, we now understand, one called Nathaniel Train and his brother Gareth Train. Nathaniel is a former Queensland school principal, and he had been the subject of a missing persons notice by New South Wales Police. That's why their counterparts from Queensland were actually at that property. It should remind everyone just what a dangerous job policing can be. Dangerous and, in this case, deadly. The local mayor, Paul McVeigh, will join us shortly. And we've talked to Paul before. And we'll also be joined by the local federal member, Nationals leader David Littleproud, and Queensland Senator Pauline Hanson, plus Lee Faulkner from Triple M Darling Downs. Natasha Belling will have the latest breaking news from what is now a deadly lead-up to Christmas. The slain officers were shot at close range, according to the Daily Telegraph. Neighbour Alan Deer was also shot and killed by the armed offenders. It is understood they were responding to a request about Train, the missing man. Train's brother was believed to live at that address where the shooting took place. Nathaniel Train, 46, was a former teacher at Yorkeys Knob State School in the far north of Queensland. It's understood the request came from Dubbo Police, where the missing report was lodged. It's a horrible, horrible story. And when you see the photographs of those two dead police officers, like the rest of us, your heart will break and our thoughts are with their families. It is Tuesday morning. Steve Price with you live on the Listener app and the Triple M Regional Network. Let's get the latest on all of this from our newsroom. Natasha Belling's with us.
Good morning, Steve. Well, that story is certainly leading the bulletin this morning. And the Australian Police Force is in mourning after six people were killed, including two officers, in that mass shooting in rural Queensland. Four officers were allegedly ambushed on the property about 300 k's west of Brisbane yesterday afternoon as they were responding to a missing persons report. Two of the officers were shot dead, as well as a member of the public, while two others managed to escape, one suffering a bullet graze. A tense standoff then followed with specialist police and Polair called in for backup. The alleged offenders, two men and a woman, were confirmed dead around 10:30 last night. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese saying this morning, Australia is grieving along with the local community.
Terrible news coming through for all Australians, but particularly for police officers and their families. They'll be feeling really traumatised today.
Meantime, a man's been arrested after a father was shot dead in Adelaide over the weekend. Detectives arrested a man last night and are expected to charge the 44-year-old with murder this morning. 41-year-old Glenn Holton died after being found lying on the road with a gunshot wound on Sunday night. In other news this morning, the Greens will today meet to discuss whether they will support the federal government's controversial energy plan. Parliament will reconvene this week to try and pass the measures, which will cap coal and gas prices in an attempt to lower our skyrocketing power bills. But National Senator Matt Canavan has told Sky News the plan won't work.
The problem here is that just no one will invest in Australia if this goes through, because what happens? What happens when gas prices absolutely crash, as they did during COVID? This happens when there's a global recession, gas prices crash, these companies lose a lot of money.
Meantime, energy industry groups are reportedly also convening today to discuss whether to reject the measures after calling for compensation last week to cover the loss of revenue if the cap is approved. And the latest trailer for the second part of Harry and Meghan's tell-all documentary has dropped overnight, and it's causing shockwaves across the world, with the couple making bombshell new allegations against the royal family, the media, and the so-called firm.
To see this institutional gaslighting.
I wasn't being thrown to the wolves, I was being fed to the wolves.
They were actively recruiting people to disseminate disinformation.
They were happy to lie to protect my brother. They were never willing to tell the truth to protect us.
Wow. The latest three episodes will be available on Netflix Thursday night.
Good on you. Thank you very much, Natasha. Paul McVeigh is the mayor of the Western Downs Regional Council. Joins us on the line. We've gone through the latest detail. Our heart breaks around Australia for that little community, Chinchilla, and the surrounding areas. It's just awful, Paul.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. And it is tragedy, mate. Our whole community is numb this morning when you've heard of six deaths there and the loss of two young police officers and one of our local residents is an absolute tragedy. And our community, we've got a great caring community, and certainly they will rally behind their families. But our condolences to those that have lost loved ones in this horrific incident here on the Western Downs.
I'll talk to David Littleproud shortly. I don't know if you've been in contact with him already this morning. I know that he is a former resident in that area, of course, in Chinchilla. This place, Weambilla, what can you tell me about that, Paul?
Yeah, well, if you look at the Western Downs, we're a large area, but a community of about 35,000 people. Weambilla is about a population of about 100. But whether it's our larger towns or our smaller communities, we are a very caring community. And to have an incident like this happen in one of the small parts of our community is absolute tragedy. But I know that community and those that live in there will be reeling this morning to think that something like this could go in right beside in our neighbours' area, sort of thing. So very, very tragic. And to have lives lost in a community of this, it'll be a major impact, Steve, across our community for many weeks to come.
Police have released the name of the neighbour who went to investigate what was going on. His name's Alan Deer. The police officers that have been brutally murdered are Rachel McCrow and Matthew Arnold. She was 26, he was 29. And I just can't imagine the terror of the younger police woman who escaped into the bush, and then the dead gunmen attempted to set fire to the bush to smoke her out, Paul. It's like something out of a horror movie.
Certainly is. It's certainly a horror movie, and I know our community will be absolutely devastated to hear something like this, and so traumatic as what you've just talked about coming across in our community. And certainly we've, as the community and as a council, we've been offering all our support to our police departments, our police officers and our community that have been devastated in this space. And as things unfold more during the day and we learn more about this incident, Steve, I know there'll be major concerns in our region and how it's all come to be. But at the moment, the priority is to look after those young families that have lost their loved ones, and those people you've just mentioned, they're not with their families today. And such a tragedy when you have young police officers going to work and, you know, you hope that everyone returns home safely every night. And this is the risk that our police officers take. And we owe them so much of an accolade for keeping our community safe. And this is a tragic situation and will be long remembered as an incident here in the Western Downs, and should never happen in here, shouldn't happen in Queensland, shouldn't happen in Australia, these events that take our loved ones away from us.
To go to work as a young police officer in a country town, and I don't think they were from Chinchilla, were they? Were they from another?
I haven't got all the detail on them, Steve.
You don't go to work thinking you're not going home. I mean, that's the bottom line.
It is, and I know we just love seeing our police in uniform, and when you rock up at incidents and people have that confidence of that support. But when our police turn up at something like this with, unawares of what was about to unfold, and it's an absolute tragedy in our community, and our heartfelt sympathies go out to those that family and friends of the people that we've just lost overnight, and to our local residents. Some of the stories going around at the moment are horrendous, and our support will be there. We've had already tremendous offers of support from our communities to both support our police and our community, and it just shows that the care that our community, the 35 residents of the Western Downs, that we really do look after each other. And this is a major impact and will be devastating and felt throughout our community for a long time to be.
Rest of Australia's thinking about you. Thank you for jumping on the phone. I know it's not an easy thing to talk about. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And Paul McVeigh there on the mobile. He's the Mayor of Western Downs Regional Council. I mentioned this missing person, Nathaniel Train. Sources have told the Daily Telegraph that there were warnings that one of his relatives had a strong dislike of police. Now, these details are triggering, so clearly just be careful who may hear this or not hear this. After those two officers, 26-year-old and 29-year-old, were shot, the gunman then stood over their bodies and fired further shots and then took their Glock pistols off them. Two other officers, as we know, managed to escape. A male officer suffering a gunshot wound, he was taken to the Chinchilla Hospital. And the female, who managed to escape, dodging the offenders after they started a bushfire in a bid to find her. She was rescued by fellow officers sent into Extractor. They also retrieved the bodies of their slain colleagues. Queensland Police Union President Ian Leavers confirmed Monday night that all offenders were dead. And he said, "Our thoughts are with the police who bravely contained and managed the subsequent operation that's now resulted in the deaths of all the offenders." Queensland Police Commissioner Katerina Carroll said, paid tribute to the police officers who died in that firefight. It is certainly a dreadful tragedy to end the year. Just dreadful scenes unfolding in Western Queensland. As we mentioned at the beginning of the program, there are six people dead, including two young police officers and a neighbour of this property. William Biller is the place. It's near Chinchilla. We'll talk to David Littleproud, leader of the Nationals, shortly about this. But to see or to have described, and you will have now seen if you go online, the photographs of the two dead police officers, it is horrendous. They were just going about their jobs. They responded to help from New South Wales to go to this property. And it's just... So it's beyond sad. It is beyond sad. Other things are occurring, of course. So Thursday, Parliament will be recalled. I found out this morning that you and I, taxpayers, will pay $1 million to have Parliament recalled for one day to attempt to pass this energy bill where the price of coal and gas are capped for 12 months. One of those who's opposing the legislation is Senator Pauline Hanson from Queensland. She joins me on the line. It's beyond sad what happened in Western Queensland last night, Pauline.
I'm devastated with it, Steve. I really am. You know, I've worked closely with the police over the years that I've been in politics and that type of thing. I have the utmost admiration and respect for them and the jobs that they go about trying to do. But for two young officers, 26 and 29, to turn up there just to look at a missing persons report for calling from New South Wales and to be shot dead. And, you know, I just... These people that did it, it wasn't just defending themselves, whatever. They just purposely shot them to death and then kept shooting bullets into their bodies. You know, beautiful people like that, if you see the photos, I'm just so upset because, you know, they could be my children. And you think that your kids are safe and they're not. But, you know, that's the job that a police officer takes on. And sometimes I get so upset for them and their families at the ridicule they get from time to time and trying to do their jobs. And really, they do it tough. I've spoken to them over the years, you know, put on suspension because they're trying to do the jobs to protect the public and they still go out there and want to be police officers, you know. I'm very sad for them and their families.
You and I don't get up in the morning to go to work thinking we won't go home because someone's going to shoot us.
That's exactly right. You know, I think these this man and woman were not long out of the academy, and by the looks of it, you know, so young and had the full life ahead of them, and you know, it's a shame. It's very upsetting.
We have to talk politics, sadly, but we will. Yeah. I know that we need to do that. What a waste of money, $1 million to get Parliament back for a day.
Steve, I can't believe that the government does this. And they talk about accountability. You know, I got a phone call yesterday, and I won't say who from, but anyway, I got a phone call yesterday saying, do I want a briefing on this legislation at this point in time? Because I've complained that Labor doesn't give us a briefing, don't give us the legislation we're supposed to vote on. They push it through Parliament. This is what's been happening since Labor's been in there. They're pushing this legislation through, don't give you enough time to look at it. I've had two of my staff that have cut back, two of my staff. And people have to realise that as a crossbencher, you have to go through all the legislation. They don't want accountability. They just want to push things through. They've got the Greens, they've got David Pocock on their side, and they get things through. Well, I hope they don't with this. I hope the Libs wake up to themselves and don't support them on this and just think, oh, well, those people won't think highly of us because we're going to stop them from getting more pay, you know, because there's over $1 billion that's going to be paid out again, more debt to the country, and it's not necessary, Steve. It's ridiculous. As I said, we need to look at the problem. We don't need sugar hits. We don't need band-aiding. We need to look at the reasons why we have escalating power prices. When the state sold off their electricity to private enterprise, and then we've headed down this path of renewable energy, they think that it's going to supply the needs that we do need in Australia for domestic and also businesses. It's not going to happen until they actually then have a diversity of power, slowly bring on to the new technologies as comes through to move across the renewables, but they're destroying the coal and the gas, and they're going to interfere in locking in a cap price for coal and gas. You know what business is going to say? Oh, we're getting the hell out of here, you know, for what it costs us to produce, and they're private enterprise. Governments can't lock them into this pricing.
I mean, the legislation is, I don't know if it's purposely confusing, but it is confusing because you've got, again, a collision between federal and state rights. You don't really know what the state governments are going to pass on or not pass on. You've now got the Queensland government arguing over royalties with Canberra. You've got all Australian taxpayers now having to put their hand in their pocket to pay out some form of compensation. But I can't see, when I read through the detail of this, where average businesses or average Australians are actually going to get cheaper power bills. What we're going to get is not so expensive power bills. Now, the way Labor's painted this is, okay, you're going to get $230 relief in your power bill. It means your power bill is not going to go up perhaps by 50%, but by 36%. It's still an increase. It's not a decrease.
It's not. And they keep heading down this path of pushing renewables as if it's the answer to everything. Steve, if you have a look at since we introduced renewables into the country, our power prices have gone up by over 300%. It has increased in prices. It's out of, you know, it's out of whack. And yet they're so bloody minded to destroy the coal. And then you've got the Greens that don't want gas. We're swamped with the gas in this country. And when Labor went ahead and put in the Gladstone LNG plants up there to supply Japan after the tsunami that they had up there, the earthquake, the thing is that they've actually, you know, didn't put a 15% domestic gas supply, which we don't do with our gas off the Northwest Shelf. And I've told the Prime Minister this, go and deal with the gas off the Northwest Shelf. We export about $84 billion a year. And we only get $300 million on tax. And yet we're not forcing them to pay their tax in this country. And they keep going down the path of, well, you know, it'll be sovereign risk. It's just bloody mindedness that I get so angry about this. And I said, deal with the retention leases. It should be for 5 years, but they keep renewing them. They sit on them for over 30 years. No one does anything with it. And make them use it. And I said also reduce the PRRT, which it means that if they invest $100 million, they get 15% on top of that as a tax recovery. So if they invest $100 million, the government's going to pay them an extra $15 million on tax credits. And that's where we've got $400 billion in tax credits by these companies off the Northwest Shelf. It's bloody mindedness. It's not just Labor Party, but it's also the coalition that have allowed this to happen.
I interviewed Adam Band on television last night. It's not my most favourite thing to do. He claims he's saying no at the moment to this, but in answer to a couple of questions, Pauline, it became clear that he's negotiating again with the government, and I suspect David Pocock is as well. Do you think in the end that the Greens and Pocock will support this cap on gas and electricity and coal prices?
Yes, I do. Yes,
so
I do.
So it'll go through?
Yeah, I do, because the Greens won't deny, you know, the people on Social Security to actually get their hand out again. And what about middle class people, Steve? You know, those people that are struggling to pay the bills, inflation, that's
happening.
Well,
they get nothing. And the government's trying to pretend they're getting something.
No, they're not getting a damn thing, Steve. And I'm sick and tired of more debt to this country. And, you know, it's always the people that are on welfare. Well, why are these people on welfare? I can understand age pensions. I can understand the disabled. I can understand these people. But those people on long-term welfare payments who keep getting handouts all the time, no wonder they won't go and get a job and apply for a job. And over 900,000 people out there who are on the unemployment benefits in this country. It is absolutely bloody ridiculous. And if we don't start pulling our heads in, the cost, and especially, you know what, if the Libs are going to vote against this, I'll tie my vote to the Libs, because I'm not going to waste taxpayers' dollars of flying down there and my time knowing that it's just pushed through the bloody parliament, no debate, nothing. And that's what it's all about. So this is an absolute disgrace of calling back parliament for one day, again, cost to the taxpayers. And they talk about, they're worried about the carbon footprint that they're leaving. This government is the worst one for it with their carbon footprint.
You think Peter Dutton will take the coalition down that track? He has said on the record, we're not going to support a plan that's going to have devastating impact on the medium and long term of our economy. Do you think he'll hold to that?
Look, I hope they do. I've touched base with the Libs, and their attitude was, well, we can't deny people the money. They're not putting up a good enough argument to explain to the people why this needs to be knocked on the head. You, as I said, Steve, there are underlying problems with this that they have to sort it out in other areas and not just keeping handing out compensation, which is only going to be for a year, a one-hit wonder with this, all this. Now, until the coalition start getting some intestinal fortitude and start being the opposition that people want and questioning this policy, it's nothing's going to happen. They're headed down the same path. They have to explain to me where this is going to benefit all Australians. Where is it going to reduce the cost of electricity in the long term? And it's not. Until we have a diversity of power, have your coal-fired power stations, we've got to learn from what's happening in UK. We've got to learn what's happening in Europe and stop blaming it on the Ukraine war, because gas was higher before the Ukraine war started than what it is now. It's got nothing to do with that, the Ukraine war and international prices. We have enough supply for our own use in this country. We don't utilise it enough to our own benefit. We've allowed the multinationals to rip the guts out of this country.
Always good to catch up, Senator. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Bye. Pauline Hanson there, One Nation leader. She'll be in Canberra, presumably. We'll see where that vote goes on Thursday.
And large parts of the country will once again experience more extreme weather today. A cold front moving across the south of the country is bringing snow to Victoria's alpine regions and rain to both Tasmania and South Australia. Sky News meteorologist Rob Sharp says parts of New South Wales and Queensland will also see more rainfall and strong winds today after wild storms caused widespread damage yesterday.
So yesterday it was New South Wales and inland Queensland seeing the bulk of the storms. Quite a few bringing damaging winds, bringing down trees and power lines, and also bringing a fair bit of large hail around as well.
Steve, we were in the studio when that storm hit Sydney yesterday, yep. Just before about 11 o'clock. It was like a cyclone. It was horizontal rain and the winds were insane.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on the TV news last night. It looked horrendous. Speaking of weather, why don't you have a look around the region, see what exactly is going on around the rest of Australia?
We were
on
there. Absolutely. For this Tuesday, the 13th of December, no rain. Some good news for Orange, mostly sunny, top of 17. Sunny conditions also on the way for Bathurst and Mudgee today. Sunny also, top of 25 for Dubbo, mostly sunny for Canberra, low of 6 and a top of 19 degrees today. Possible late shower on the way for Wagga Wagga, top of 21. Becoming cloudy for Griffith, 22 degrees, sunny and 25 for Coffs Harbour. Sunny conditions also for Port Macquarie, top of 25. Just 16 degrees today and a shower or two on the way for Mount Gambier. And showers with a possible storm and a top of 30 for Hervey Bay.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the program, terrifying scenes at the little community of Wyambilla near Chinchilla in Queensland late yesterday afternoon and through the night. I just can't get my head around this. We've not seen an incident like this probably, if you think about it, since Port Arthur. And I just keep thinking about the two dead police officers. One of them is only very new to the job. 29-year-old man, 26-year-old police officer woman, both dead, and the terrifying ordeal that the young woman in her first year and a few weeks out of the police force, who managed to get away, was hiding in the bush, and then the gunman tried to set fire and flush her out. It just beggars belief what's happened here. David Littleproud is the local federal member for Parliament, of course the Nationals leader. We find him in Queensland this morning. Our hearts just have to go out to those police officers just ambushed and cold-bloodedly murdered, David.
Yeah, mate, we're pretty numb up here at the moment. When you become a country copper, you become part of the community, and the community wraps its arms around you, and I'm a chinchilla boy. I can tell you this isn't our community. This isn't what happens here. We're quiet, peace-loving people, law-abiding citizens, and what's happened to those two great Australians is a tragedy, and the neighbour who we understand came to find out what was going on to offer assistance has obviously also lost his life. But this is just a tragedy that just doesn't happen in our part of the world. So there's a lot of processing going on at the moment. I understand, I just heard from the state member that I think the officers that went out to the job, Wyambilla, were actually from Tara Station. So Tara is about 50 k's down the road from Chinchilla. So this area is between Chinchilla and Tara. So we understand that they were officers from Tara. I understand that the young female officer who's actually a week only out of the academy has now been taken to Toowoomba Hospital, and the officer shot in the legs at Chinchilla Hospital. I just heard Ian Leavers say that. So we're obviously thinking of them, but the families of these two young officers is just gut-wrenching. You just don't expect to see that stuff in Australia, let alone in a little country town where law-abiding citizens know everybody. And to be honest, mate, police are revered. We have this sense of reverence to them because we know that in the hour of need, they're there for us, and we know them. They're part of the footy clubs, the cricket clubs. And so, you know, there's exalted position in our community for police in small country towns, and to have two of the finest ripped away and to lose an innocent bystander is just beyond words.
Yeah, you don't expect to go to work and not come home, and the families of those police must be just in all sorts of trouble today. I note that you pronounced it Wyambilla. Tell us about Wyambilla. What sort of little community is it, David?
Yeah, it's not a town. It's actually what you just call a location. It's some pretty tough country in there. And effectively, it's a number of blocks that have been cut up and have been sold many years ago. You'd struggle, you know, it'd be tough to make a living on one of those little blocks. They're more lifestyle blocks. So, you know, it's pretty isolated away from Chinchilla, which is, it's now about 7,000 people. When I grew up, there's only about 3,000, but we had coal seam gas hit. And Tara is probably the best part of now 1,200, 1,500 people, but very closely linked because of sport and service clubs. So Wyambilla is just in between it. And it's just a location. It's an area. There's no township there. It's just a number of small blocks that have been cut up. And people living out there. So obviously, but the gentleman who lost his life, the neighbour, I'm sure that the community be wrapping their arms around his family as we are around them and the police family today. But isolated from, in a sense of, there's not a lot around. There's no township, there's no services around. So they would have had to come from Chinchilla, Tara, and probably Dalby as well.
We're told by police reports and the Australian newspapers doing a good job on this story that the dead gunmen, when they approached the police officers who were laying wounded in the driveway, were wearing camouflage. Are your contacts in Chinchilla telling you anything about who these people might be?
Look, I think it's too early to speculate, and I think we just let the police make those statements. There's a lot that's swirling around at the moment, and I think it's important we just give the police the free air to investigate properly. And they'll want to do this thoroughly. There's two of their own that they've lost, so that they just need some time and space. But I think in the fullness of time, we'll get a lens on it. But from what I understand is that the job that was the four officers were going out to do was effectively nothing dangerous, in the sense it was just to follow up on a missing person request from New South Wales Police. And so there wasn't any known intent of danger that they were walking into, from what I appreciate from what I'm hearing on the ground there. And that actually... You know, the malicious nature of what's happened, you just have to ask why, like for what. And I think that's just making it a bit harder at the moment. So that's why I think it's important we just let the police work out exactly what and why and how, so that people, and particularly the families, get the dignity of being able to process this themselves.
Yeah, the whole country's in shock. I do need to ask you, and our thoughts go out to everyone involved in that. I do need to ask you about what's going to unfold on Thursday with the energy plan that Labor is now trying to ram through the parliament. $1 million cost to recall parliament on Thursday, I should tell our audience. The opposition leader, Peter Dutton, has called the Labor plan a slow motion train wreck on energy policy. Can you explain to me how we keep getting told we're going to pay up to $257 less for our power bills by capping coal and gas?
Yeah, mate. Look, this is look. My head's not really in it today. I got to be honest with you. My head's not there. I don't really feel like having a crack at the government today.
Not a problem.
I just really want to just talk to the people that are hurting the most, sorry.
What will Chinchilla do today? How do you then bring the community together? I mean, obviously, clearly, it's a very small community. Everyone knows everyone else. What will they do?
Yeah, I think Chinchilla and Tara, I think if these officers are from the Tara station, I think there'll be a lot of soul searching. There'll be a lot of support you'll find from not only community groups, just from community members that'll just want to put their arms around our police, and obviously the family of the innocent bystander, the neighbour. They'll want to make sure that they've got their arms around them and they've got them protected. And I think it'll just be a slow process. This is just about being there and letting them know you're there. And I think that's the most important thing at the moment. That's what our communities are about, and particularly for police, as I said, who have an exalted position in our communities. This will be pretty raw just for their own community. And I know that they like to process things themselves, but I think you'll find that the community want to process this with them because they're feeling their pain at the moment. And little towns like that really want to show that and show their appreciation, particularly in these trying times.
Yeah, I think everyone around the country is in shock. Thank you for giving us some time, David. Good on you.
Thanks for having me.
David Littleproud there, Nationals leader and the local federal MP for the area where that unfolded. Queensland Police President, Union President Ian Leavers has shared an emotional internal memo with union members describing the force's great sadness over the senseless murders. He confirmed the constables, both from the small town of Tara, had been fired upon during, quote, routine missing person inquiry at the property and received the full force of the blasts, while their two colleagues were lucky to have escaped with their lives. These officers' tragic, needless and senseless murders have already been felt deeply across Queensland and all over Australia, and he's absolutely right about that. Talking about Australia, extraordinary aerial maps of the River Murray floodwaters around the town of Renmark. Now, I grew up in Adelaide and I spent many school holidays with my parents in places like Berry and Lake Bonney and Renmark, Wakeree, Loxton, all those places. So I know it reasonably well. The water coming down the Murray is unbelievable. Peter Hunter is the Renmark mayor. Thanks for your time, Peter.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to chat.
Those pictures are incredible, aren't they?
Absolutely amazing. At the water, it's normally that narrow strip of river has gone so wide. Incredible.
So you're almost an island.
Well, we are effectively an island. There's no doubt about that. Bookmark Creek has swollen, if you like, behind the town. The main Murray has swollen. And then both north and south of the town, the water has gone out in the floodplains.
So you're getting something between 190 and 220 gigalitres a day, they say, by the end of the year, 180 already. That's just so much water. You knew it was coming, but how hard has it been for the people of Renmark to go, well, we know it's coming, but when? It must have been awful waiting.
It's quite different to eastern states and some of the flash flooding that others have gone through, because you hear it's coming and it's coming, and different reports about amounts and levels and all the rest of it. In a way, it kind of builds that anxiousness amongst people. But gave us time to do the preparations. So Renmark has its 38 kilometres of banks already up well above the predictions. So it's quite a different scenario to what you're used to hearing on the eastern states.
Is it going to get much worse, do you believe?
I think the predictions that they're putting up at the moment, 180 at the moment, around that 190 to 220 by the end of the year is pretty accurate.
What's it done to the orchards?
Well, some of them, it varies depending where you are on the Murray, as New South Wales and Queensland find. As all the tributaries come into the Murray and then it winds its way down, Renmark has some crops, particularly vineyards, close to the river, and some of those have been inundated. As you go further down, you've got shacks closer to the river and they've been inundated. And it just varies depending where you are, in which section of the river, as you would have seen as a youngster.
Good luck with it all, Peter. It's a beautiful part of the world. Let's hope that everything can resolve itself between now and the end of the year. Good on you. Peter Hunter there is the Renmark Mayor. Big Bash is back on now. The Willow Talk podcast, free on the Listener app, where you can hear us each day. The Brad Haddon, former Australian wicketkeeper, Triple M's cricket commentator, joins us. I see Steve Smith signed a four-match, $250,000 contract to play with the Sydney Sixers. Sounds like the money you used to be on, Brad.
I wish. Good morning. No, I think common sense has prevailed there, actually. I know Steve Smith was very keen to play last year, and for some unknown reason that got blocked. But you want your big players playing at the back end of the tournament, and there's no more exciting player in the game than Steve Smith, and it'll be great to see Smith v Warner too in the local derby at the back end of the tournament.
You need the big names playing too, don't you? I mean, Big Bash has a little bit, I think, lost its way slightly. I mean, it was huge when it started on, and the 10 network was showing it. It seems to have been lost a little bit in the cricket scheduling. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think the one thing that can turn it around, and we've got that this year, we've got more star power. I think what you need a few villains and some guys that will put bums on seats. And we've got Andre Russell coming out now. But I think one of the most exciting things for the tournament is a lot of the Australian players are coming to play at the back end of the tournament. So the more we can get of those guys playing in the final, I know Nathan Lyon comes back to the Sixers. David Warner is going to be a huge in for the Thunder. We know how dominating he is in this form of the game. So the bigger superstars we get, the better for the competition. And you're right, we need them playing.
Triple M's calling the test matches. We've had Perth and then Adelaide. Perth crowd poor, Adelaide a little better. But now the real action starts. I don't think the West Indies, because of the quality of their team at the moment, was going to drag those crowds. But certainly South Africa will, won't they, Brad?
I think so. And I think with what's gone on with the two countries, this is the first time that they've met since sandpaper. So I'd imagine that they'll be all guns blazing. Both teams got two really, really good pace bowling attacks. So I think what we're going to see is some old-fashioned aggressive fast bowling. I know South Africa got Rabada and Nocky, who both bowled the ball around 150 Ks, which makes it exciting. Whether they can bat and get enough runs on the board will be interesting. But what tends to happen in these big tournaments is South Africa need to find a hero. And I know Dean Elgar, their captain's a fighter. Australia batting well at the top of the order. So it's going to be a great contest. And I reckon it's going to be a fiery one as well.
How good was it having Steve Smith back skippering Australia?
I tell you what I noticed about that is the crowd. He enjoyed it. When he walked on to toss the coin in Adelaide. There was a huge cheer for Steve Smith as he walked out. There's an enormous cheer when he went out to bat. So, mate, it was great. He had a smile on his face at the toss. He's got a great cricket brain, but I think the biggest one was the crowd, how receptive they were to him, that he was having the opportunity again to captain.
He looked like he was happy, the happiest I've seen him, and you'd know better than me, happiest I've seen him since that happened in South Africa.
Yeah, he was, and I think you can see that in his batting. I think he's batting as well as he's played since 2015, where he had that amazing summer against India. He looks really settled at the crease. He's enjoying his cricket, and just watching him closely in that Adelaide test, he was enjoying the tactical side of the game too. I think that really stimulates him, being able to change the field, try to work out the batsman on the job. So I think he looks really happy, and we're seeing that in his performance. And I think he's going to be our big player against South Africa. I think he's ready for a bumper series.
Khawaja Labuschagne against the Windies, obviously they were in red hot form. Do we read too much into it though, because of the quality of the West Indies attack wasn't what it would normally be?
Yeah, but in saying that, I think Khawaja and both Marnus have been outstanding for a long time now. I think Usman Khawaja just went past 1,000 runs in 10 test matches. So since he had that unbelievable innings at the SCG, where he came in for a concussion sub for Travis Head, he got back-to-back hundreds. And since then, he's just enjoyed his second lease of life. I reckon he's playing every test match like it's his last, and he's content where he is with his game. And Marnus, it's been amazing to watch his rise. His first-class cricket wasn't great. He was only averaging mid-30s. And to come out and do what he does in test cricket now, I think he's what, averaging around 60. He's got 10 hundreds in 30 test matches. He's been phenomenal since he's come into that Australian team at number three. And since Ricky Ponting, that's what we're really missing. We're missing that quality number three, and we've found one now.
Do you think the Australian public will come back to cricket? They seem to have fallen a little bit out of love, but, you know, people have been working. We've been through 2 years horrible COVID. You get now to the test matches of December, January. The crowds will be back, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and I think they were back during the 2020 World Cup. And what that says to me is, like all of us, we just want a contest. And you touched on before, West Indies, as much as we can smile about that series, that they were pretty ordinary. Their standard of test cricket hasn't been great for some time, and that was on display. But I think what we're going to get now is we're going to get a real contest against South Africa. I think it's going to be fiery. And the Australian public, I think, will enjoy that. I think they'll get around the Australian team. And we go back to the Gabba, where it's always exciting to play. But you've got Melbourne and Sydney, which are massive events.
Huge.
And people come from the country. 100%. They book holidays around those ones. So they'll be well watched.
We love the Willow Talk podcast. Good on you, Brad. Thank you, mate. We'll listen to you across the summer.
Always a pleasure.
Brad Haddin there, former Australian wicketkeeper, of course. It is Tuesday, the 13th of December. Here's what we know so far about what happened overnight in Western Queensland. We've now got the names of the two police officers who were brutally murdered as they lay on the ground wounded. Constable Rachel McCrow, 26, Constable Matthew Arnold, 29, murdered in cold blood yesterday afternoon at this property at Weambilla, south of Chinchilla. That happened about 4:40 Queensland time. There was a deadly firefight late last night, and police who attended then shot dead two men and a female. The two men killed in the firefight were brothers Nathaniel and Gareth Train. The woman is yet to be named. Nathaniel, a former Queensland school principal, he'd been the subject of a missing persons notice by the New South Wales Police. The slain officers were shot at close range by armed men wearing camouflage. Neighbour Alan Dare was also shot down and killed by the armed defenders. It's understood they were responding to a request from New South Wales Police. A female officer managed to escape, dodging the offenders, after they reportedly started a bushfire in a bid to find her. Another male officer suffering a gunshot wound also escaped and was taken to Chinchilla Hospital. As I said, the Queensland Police Union President Ian Leavers has said, while we are yet to learn the full extent of what has occurred, we do know this event is extraordinarily distressing on many levels. I extend my heartfelt condolences to the officers' families, friends, and colleagues. Our thoughts are with them during this extremely difficult time. Those officers paid the ultimate sacrifice to keep our community safe. I would like to also pay tribute to all police and all first responders who assisted at the scene and are continuing to respond this evening. Tragically, this is the largest loss of life we have suffered in one single incident in recent times. It's devastating news that will be deeply felt right across Queensland. I can tell you it'll be deeply felt right across all of Australia. Triple M Darling Downs breakfast host Lee Faulkner joins us. You must be in as much shock as everyone else, Lee.
It's devastating, Steve, to say the least. It is absolutely devastating. Our beautiful Western Downs community, we've been wrapping our arms around them this morning. I've spoken with the mayor. I've spoken with the member for Maranoa, David Littleproud, and they are just devastated as we all are. You certainly don't expect something like this. You don't expect something like this, you know, these days, even in capital cities. But to find out that six people have lost their lives in a shootout in a tiny town of 100 people in an area like the Western Downs is just extraordinary, and we really are very much struggling to get our heads around it this morning.
Lee, it's almost like you and I are reporting on something that's happened in America with guns, not Australia.
Exactly. I mean, we've talked about this morning, that, you know, since we changed those gun laws back in 96, we just don't hear about multiple shootings anymore. And thank goodness that we don't. And we're looked upon around the world as being, you know, the bastion of that, and other countries suggesting that they should be following in our footsteps if they haven't done so already. Obviously, here we've seen, you know, the darkest side of all of this. Two young police officers who've now been named, Constable Matthew Arnold and Constable Rachel McCrow, who've gone to do their job following up a missing person's inquiry, allegedly. And
Lee,
then, of course,
this I'll just happened. Interrupt there, Lee. Natasha's going to have to take over. I've been told I have to evacuate this building. So, Natasha, we'll just take over, and I'll be back here as soon as I possibly can be.
Absolutely, Steve. Thank you. Lee, apologies for that. As we've just mentioned, I think everything is okay, but Steve is following procedures, and I can see right now is being asked to leave the building. I hope everything's okay. Lee, as Steve mentioned, the details coming through about this shooting, as we just heard there from the police commissioner, every Queenslander's heart is breaking today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just seeing the emotion, Katerina Carroll. In fact, it was only a couple of months ago I attended a women's event in the Western Downs hosting Katerina Carroll, and we were speaking extensively about young officers in particular. And to see the devastation on her face during that press conference just moments ago, it is devastating. But as I say, these small communities, I grew up in the city, but I've been 31 years in Queensland and 20 in regional Queensland. It is different out here. It really is. And this community will take a very, very long time to heal from this. And not just the 100 people in Wyambilla, but the greater communities of Tara and Chinchilla and across the Western Downs.
Do we have any more details that you're hearing at the moment, Lee, about exactly what unfolded? Because from what we can understand, the four police officers have gone out to this rural property to follow up a missing persons report. And then this has seemed to unfold. That was, you know, almost an execution style shooting. And then one of the poor police officers who managed to escape was then, from what we can understand, taking refuge in the bush. And then they set a fire. Is that what you're hearing?
That's exactly what we're hearing. That, and it would appear that fire that had been set was, in order to flush out that final officer. And you can only imagine what the end scenario would have been had that officer have fled into the wrong area. Thankfully, they managed to get away, and thankfully now being treated. But again, I mean, you can only imagine the horror that young officer too has gone through. Then, of course, other officers then descending on the property, and whilst they tried to make this a peaceful resolution, that wasn't going to be the case for those perpetrators, allegedly. Then, we've got three people there that have lost their lives further to this. So, the tragedy just is compounding at the moment.
And I know we're going to find out more details as the story continues to unfold, Lee, but even the neighbour that we understand at this early stage had just gone over to help or to find out what was going on, and it seems that he's just been killed in the process.
Yeah, the neighbour who has been named Alan Dare, And that is exactly what it appears to be the case. Wrong place at the wrong time, doing exactly what you would do in a small community like Coombilla, would be to go and see what's going on. Gunshots are fired, what's happening, and I'll go over and make sure everybody's okay. And tragically, walked into the middle of this scenario and has also lost his life.
No one would have even started to imagine this would have been unfolding, Lee. No officer goes out. We all know they face risks every day, but they would have never expected this would unfold, would they?
No, I mean, absolutely not. And we talk with the local police here on a regular basis. We are in contact with, the police from not only this region but right across our region. And obviously they are very well aware of the dangers of their job, and they know that when they take on that responsibility. But at the same time, they and their families are expecting that at the end of the day they will walk in through the door again. And now for two families, they have been absolutely shattered and their lives have been turned upside down from just going and doing a job that many of us, to be honest, wouldn't even consider putting our hands up to do.
Yeah, you nail it. In regards, Lee, also to the details coming out about these officers that have both died in these horrific circumstances, have been killed and ambushed, is that both of them, we can understand that early reports, they were only aged in their 20s, and the female officer, is that true? She'd only been on the job for 6 weeks?
That's what we're led to believe. A brand new recruit and a very proud recruit from what I'm hearing. Constable Rachel McCrae was only 26 years of age, and Constable Matthew Arnold a little longer in the service, but only 29 years of age. These are young Queenslanders in the prime of their lives who, again, as I say, putting their hand up to do a job that many of us wouldn't consider. And now not only are their families dealing with the utmost of tragedy, but so too a community who've lost a couple of members. Because in these rural communities like Tara and Chinchilla and places like that, these police officers really become part of the community. They're down at the local footy oval on a Saturday morning, and they're out at night, and they look out for their constituents in that part of the world, and they are accepted into these communities in a way that is very different again to the city, and so they will be really feeling this loss today and for many, many weeks and months to come.
Everyone knows everyone in those rural communities, Lee. Yeah. We really appreciate your time, and we are thinking about all of you because, as you mentioned, this is not only devastating for the Queensland Police Force, who have lost two very, very excellent police officers, but a whole community is in mourning and still in shock this morning. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Gosh, as I just mentioned, our thoughts are for all of those terrible people terrible circumstances surrounding that horrifying shooting that's still unfolding. As we go to air, we're changing pace now, and we're going to talk all things in the finance world with Scott Phillips. Good morning, Scott.
Tash, good morning. It's hard to care about finance this morning, isn't it?
It is. I mean, Steve, unfortunately, just to update everyone who may be tuning in, Steve has been evacuated from the studio in Melbourne. We understand he's okay at the moment, but I'm just stepping in just to process this all right now, and we're just talking there to Lee. Scott, this is horrifying. This is something out of a Hollywood horror movie, and something, as Steve said earlier with Lee, that we usually report in the US.
Yeah, it is, mate. The circumstances and they are still unfolding, as you said, and Lee has said, it's more details are coming to light. It's a horrible, horrible situation where, coppers doing their job, going to, what otherwise might have been a routine call. I'm sure, hundreds and thousands of police have done that in the past, trying to find people or understand disturbances or whatever. They never know what they're walking into. I think, We don't always appreciate, I mean, I think we kind of understand it, but we don't always appreciate the risks that these police officers are willingly taking on. Most days are routine days of, I'm sure, paperwork and drama for a lot of them. But then you get to these situations where it seems like they've been ambushed without any warning, without any, maybe there's some small consolation in that. Maybe they didn't know what was coming, and maybe they were, we're suffering for too long, but it's just a horrible, horrible situation. It shouldn't have to happen. But these police officers do this every day. They go to work, they put on the uniform
to save and protect service. All right. of us.
Exactly.
Scott, just moving, if we can, on to the world of finance at the moment. Look, there's a lot of devil in the detail about this energy deal. We've had a lot of promises from the federal government when you start to look at the detail of it. And I know anything is good, but it's set to only save households and businesses around $200 a year. Now, considering how much our bills have skyrocketed, that's not really going to make a big difference for a lot of people.
It's not, mate. This is a really difficult one because we're in a situation where there are no good choices for the government. Even that money that's being saved, by the way, is not really being saved. I mean, it comes off the energy bill, but it goes on, most of it goes on straight onto the government deficit, government debt. So, you know, the taxpayer, we paid $200 less in cash and put $200 on the national credit card in the process. So, you know, there are a whole lot of people out there who need this support, small businesses, low-income earners, welfare recipients who simply can't afford to heat their homes or cool their homes to be on the time of year without some relief, without some support. So governments around the country need to do something. Good to see the state and federal governments coming together in some way, shape or form. I don't really have a good answer for this one, Tash. We want to be a country where the rule of law matters and sovereign risk isn't an issue. And there's already some of these companies saying, well, actually, there's potential takeovers that may or may not go ahead. Companies that are using this as either an excuse or a reason to pull out from new developments, Glencore in Queensland in particular. So those things are happening at the same time as we're saying, well, what is the role for energy prices in a country like ours? We are a market economy. We think it's important that prices can go up and down as these things happen. Governments can't provide endless subsidies, otherwise you end up in a situation like in the UK where Liz Truss effectively underwrote the energy prices and it cost her position, and the world's financial markets, you know, took a very dim view of that. So you've got this really strange situation. What do you do? I mean, in the old days when there were state electricity commissions, I suppose government just wore the pain of that and the upside. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's something to an average price. I honestly don't know what you do. I'm actually reasonably hopeful that we have energy price relief at a supply level sooner rather than later. I'm not talking about days or weeks, maybe even not even months, but I think we'll have, you know, as things normalise, energy prices will start to come back down, and that makes a whole lot of sense. And we're paying the price of a lack of government planning for probably the best part of 25 or 30 years.
For decades of mismanagement on both sides of government. Scott, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for stepping up today. Really appreciate it, and we'll chat with you very shortly. That is Scott Phillips.
Thanks, Tash.
From the Motley Fool. Natasha Belling filling in for Steve Price right now. We understand he is back in the building. There was a bit of an emergency earlier this morning, but just a quick update. The Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk is holding a news conference right now, updating the media on the latest situation with this deadly shooting in rural Queensland, where six people have been killed, including two police officers. Steve, before I throw to you, I understand we have a grab from the Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk. Let's take a quick listen.
This is indeed a horrific tragedy. And on behalf of the entire state of Queensland, I offer my deep, deep condolences to the families and loved ones of those two young constables who were tragically killed. Sometimes we take our police for granted. Sometimes we forget the risk that they take every single day of their life. I want to echo the thoughts of the Police Union President Ian Leavers that wherever you see a police officer in the next few days or weeks, offer them a kind word or a sign of respect. Tonight and today, flags on government buildings will fly at half mast. Hopefully it will give the QPS family some comfort to know that the people of this state absolutely respect and appreciate every single thing that they do. I doubt that this will bring much comfort to the families and loved ones of those who were killed. They were so young, so young. They were incredibly brave. These were absolutely callous, brutal acts, and with honour they served.
That was Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Queensland Premier, speaking just moments ago, updating the situation with this deadly shooting in rural Queensland, Steve, where six people have been killed, including those two very young police officers.
Yeah, it's tragedy beyond tragedy. And as I mentioned when I was talking to Lee just before that fire alarm went off, that It feels like we should be talking about an event in small town America, not in Western Queensland. We do associate these things with incidents in the United States with their crazy gun laws, but we don't hear. And ever since Port Arthur, when John Howard managed to ram through those changes to the gun laws, we've not seen these sorts of events. I mean, interestingly, 30 years ago this week was the Queen Street Massacre in Melbourne, and before that, the Hoddle Street Massacre. And then you had, of course, Port Arthur. But we've been lucky enough in this country to, in the main, not have that problem. So thank you for jumping in. It's ridiculous what happened to me in the last 10 minutes, but that's another story.
Yeah, I just think, Steve, also that you mentioned it rightfully so a short time ago. As the details emerge about this is something out of a horror movie. These poor police officers were ambushed, and then you mentioned it. One of the officers that was lucky to escape was cowering in the bush, and then the offenders set the bush alight.
Yeah, and she will be traumatised by that. She's only been in the, out of the academy for 8 weeks, and that's her induction into working as a police officer. Mr. Leavers, the head of the police union, said she did not know whether she was going to be shot or she was going to be burnt to death, burnt alive. I know she was sending messages to loved ones saying she was at a point where she thought it was her time. That's how traumatised she was. He said one couldn't comprehend what must have been going through her mind at the time. She was in contact with her other colleagues, trying to assure them we could get support to go and assist their fallen colleagues at that point of time. All the police involved yesterday were brave, brave people who put their lives on the line, including that amazing young policewoman. So
we just heard from the Queensland Premier there saying, you know, when we see a police officer today, to say thank
good idea. Great idea. Thank you, and thank you for stepping in. I'll explain to you what happened when we get to that shortly. 131 Sorry, folks, I've been a bit traumatised by all of this. 1-300-23-99-99 is our number. We talked about the floods with Renmark earlier. Peter Walsh, the Victorian Nationals leader, State MP for Murray Plains, joins us on the line. Awful news out of Queensland, Peter.
Just terrific, Steve. It is. I just can't comprehend how humans could do that to other humans. It just is beyond belief.
And as a bushy, you understand exactly the importance the local copper plays in the community.
Oh, they are integral. They are embedded in their community. It's as I said, it's just, as you said, I think a horror movie, an absolute horror movie. And our prayers go out to everyone that's been involved. It is just such a traumatic time.
I want to talk about the recovery for your communities, particularly the hardest hit places like Echuca and Rochester. How are things at the moment, given that we're getting very close to that period where the community up there would normally embrace a whole bunch of visitors for Christmas period?
Well, particularly for Rochester, which is the hardest of hard hit, a lot of frustrations coming to the fore. We're getting into that long, slow grind of the recovery. And red tape, bureaucracy, all the challenges that happen when after these events are really starting to wear the community down, that the insurance companies had representatives in the town assisting with paperwork, but they're all starting to pack up and head back to their wherever they work normally, and there's still issues with insurance claims, with the scopes of work, not including the whole house or the whole business, and very hard. Spend 2, 3, 4 hours on the phone trying to talk to someone to get these issues resolved. That whole grind of getting resolution to what should be fairly simply solved is starting to wear people down, and there needs to be more resources to assist with that. And the other one is, which the community desperately want, is a total re-examination of how Epilock Weir, the storage that is on the Campaspe River that fills and creates these floods, how that operates in the future, because who owns the water in the reservoir, how much is carried over from one year to the next is very different from when it was first built, how it was first operated for irrigation. And there's a very strong view in the community that a change to the operation of Epilock and potentially a change to the dam wall that allows pre-releases could mean that you don't have these sorts of events or as bad or events in the future.
You make an excellent point, because there's no point having a natural disaster like this, the impact it's had on the community, the damage it's done, the the cost to people in terms of income and not learn from it. I mean, I was speaking with Steve Krieg, the mayor of Lismore, this week, and they're still 9.5 months on, still trying to recover from what happened to them. So, you know, one of these events has got to be used as an example of, you know, what we've got to learn from them, from all of these events, and how we prevent them from happening again, don't we?
Well, we do, and you know, it's 11 years since this happened in Rochester last time, and what people are saying to me is, we haven't learned from how to do the recovery better, and the epilogue thing is a new discussion, but there is data being collected on the number of houses, the damage to houses, what needs to be done. But as I'm being told, because of privacy rules, that data can't necessarily be shared with other agencies to assist with recovery. So there's duplication in building the database of who and what needs assistance. It almost needs someone to come in and sit over the top of the whole thing and just run it, Steve, rather than have different agencies trying to do the best they can. I'm not criticising them individually, but the system seems to be grinding Rochester down at the moment.
Spring Street know what's going on here? Do that, or have they forgotten already?
No. I have fed it in, and we're trying to get some of those issues resolved. But it almost it's a bit like whack-a-mole at the country show. Every time something comes up and you resolve that, there seems to be another thing bob up. Most recent one. The preschool was flooded. They're going to get a portable building put on the high school oval. But I'm told one of the reasons that won't be open for the start of the next school year is because here in Victoria we have road laws that stop the movement of over-dimensional loads over the Christmas holiday period, road safety points of view, which I've raised and we'll try and get resolved. But it just seems to be so many hurdles, Steve, for the people that just want results on the ground to get their community back to more normal activity.
What would your advice be to Melburnians in particular, but people listening to us wherever we're on air in Australia that would normally come to that area on the Murray over the school holiday period? Is it sensible to come? Do the communities want tourists to come there? What's the story, Peter?
They most definitely want tourists to come. There is some limitations on how the Murray River can be used at the moment, but I met with Murray River Tourism Board last week, and the businesses are really, really suffering. They had, you know, 2.5 years of various COVID restrictions in either New South Wales or Victoria, and now the floods. They desperately want people in town. They want people in beds in the accommodation. They want people in the restaurants eating, enjoying the great hospitality that's offered. So if someone's considering coming, please come, because the community needs you to come there and make a contribution by eating, staying, buying, doing whatever you can do to enjoy the area. It is open for business and we want people.
Great message. Good luck, mate. Nice to talk again.
Thanks, Steve.
Peter Walsh, Victorian Nationals leader.
In other news this morning, Prince Harry claims people were happy to lie to protect his brother, William, but not willing to tell the truth to protect him and Meghan in a newly released trailer. Volume 2 of the documentary will feature unseen footage of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex on what Harry calls a freedom flight out of the UK.
I wonder what would have happened to us had we not got out when we did.
Our security was being pulled. Everyone in the world knew where we were.
I said, we need to get out of here.
Some bombshell allegations in that new trailer, Steve. The second part of the documentary is set to drop on Netflix Thursday night, our time.
And we can talk about it on Friday, can't we?
But hang on, you said a week
You're
ago.
You're reviewing it again.
Yeah, of course. But you said a week ago that you weren't going to watch it, and then you watched every minute of the last three eps. But I do feel now everyone was saying they didn't think there were going to be any bombshell allegations. I think with that trailer, there may be.
We'll wait and see. Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Natasha Bellingback, she's been doing an outstanding job for us today, jumping in while I had to get off air because of a fire alarm in the building. 1300 23 99 99 is our number. I mentioned Paul Fletcher is the manager of Opposition Business, joins us on the line. $1 million is the estimate cost to recall Parliament, Paul.
Well, Steve, that's right. The Prime Minister told us last Friday that Parliament needed to be recalled this Thursday to deal with their package supposedly addressing energy prices. Now, They've had 6 months in government, but due to this chaotic mismanagement, now Parliament's being recalled. There's 226 parliamentarians, so when you add up all the flights, the travel allowance, the comcars, staff travel, you easily get to $1 million. That's before you look at the costs of the extra security guards and parliamentary attendants and others who will be need to work on that day, many of whom work on a casual basis, people in the catering outlets and so on. So quite unnecessary spending because this government has completely mismanaged this issue. They went to the election promising a $275 reduction in people's power prices. Since then, we know energy bills have gone up. The budget predicted electricity up 56%, gas up 44%. And they took 6 months before finally getting around to convening a meeting of the energy ministers. And then we were told last Friday, this is also urgent, that the parliament needs to be resumed this Thursday, even though parliament had supposedly risen for the year a week and a half ago, and taxpayers might well ask, well, why are we needing to spend all this money? Why has this been left to the last minute? Wouldn't there have been a more efficient way to do this?
It's a train wreck. I mean, would there have been an easier way to do it? Does it have to be legislated? I mean, well, again, I guess Paul wanted...
Steve, those are all very good questions for the government. We still haven't seen the legislation. Mr Albanese said that we would see it, I think, late today, and their proposal is then the Parliament on Thursday... that this will get rushed through the House of Representatives and through the Senate all in one day. We've seen a lot of people asking serious questions about this package. It's all been put together on the rush, and now the idea is the Parliament just gives it the rubber stamp. Now, normally, Parliament has things called committees where you look into these matters. Everybody who's affected has a chance to have their say. All of that good and sensible process is being thrown out the window because Mr Albanese is rushing to get this done, and he hasn't yet explained why it's necessary. So the funding that's been provided based upon the information available for rebates to or reductions in people's individual bills, that's not on the information available what will be discussed on Thursday. What the government has said is it will be this price cap in relation to gas. So it's all just, it's a huge rush. They haven't explained why the rush is necessary, but more importantly, they haven't explained why they've managed things so chaotically that over $1 million of taxpayers' money will have to be spent to reconvene the Parliament.
Interestingly, I was talking to Pauline Hanson before. She got a call yesterday, she wouldn't tell me who from, offering her a briefing on the legislation. Now, how's she supposed to get her head around that with the limited staff that independent senators now have and give an accurate reflection in her vote on a piece of legislation she hasn't even seen?
Well, Steve, that's a really important point. You know, there's 151 people in the House of Representatives, 76 in the Senate. Each of them has a vote. Each of them needs to think about this important matter. And yet, the government is going to make the legislation available on what looks like less than 2 days before we're required to consider it. The government said there won't be question time on Thursday. I mean, these are all the normal processes. That's what they said.
What do you mean, no question time?
That's quite extraordinary. So they're calling the Parliament back and they're proposing to use their numbers in the House to make sure that there is no question time. So, you know, this is Mr Albanese, who for years was going on about the role of the Parliament. Correctly, he was going on about the role of the Parliament to scrutinise the work of government. But now that he's in Parliament, he's Prime Minister, now he's in government, he's turning his back on all the principles that he claimed to stand for in terms of the importance of Parliament in keeping a check and a balance on the government of the day. And, you know, often amendments that are put up can improve bills, but if it just gets rammed through, there's no time to do any of the proper thinking or analysis.
Have you decided yet as an opposition what you'll do, or are you saying, well, we can't tell you because we haven't seen it?
Well, we'll go through our normal processes, and that includes, you know, shadow cabinet. That includes a meeting of the party room. So obviously we have to do that in a very compressed timetable because of the chaotic way that this government is working, but we will do that. And once we've gone through those proper processes, we'll arrive at our position and we'll indicate what that is. But I guess the broad point I make is that our Parliament is supposed to be there to represent all Australians, to make good decisions. And when something is as rushed as this, it's quite unnecessary. It's because of the chaotic way that Mr Albanese and the Labor government have been running things. So it's a waste of taxpayers' money, over $1 million easily. but it's also, it's really treating Parliament as a mere rubber stamp for the work of government, while even though we know from some of the things that have been said by affected businesses and companies that there are serious questions. Now, there may be answers to those, who knows, but the normal way you deal with this is you go through a proper process, you have a committee, you ask questions, the government has to explain what they're doing, but instead they're proposing the whole thing be rammed through both houses of the Parliament in one day, with parliamentarians having had very little notice at all, very little detail, very little explanation of what it is they're going to be voting on. This is not a good process.
Is this the government trying to somehow weasel its way out of that election promise of $275 and say, see, we did bring your power prices down? Is that what they're doing here?
Well, that is certainly a very plausible explanation. You know, on 97 occasions, the Labor Party told us before the election they were going to reduce power prices by $275. We've asked them nearly every day in question time since then, do you stand by that commitment? They've refused. Mr. Albanese, Mr. Bowen, a whole range of other ministers have refused to recommit to that number. They just roll out a list of excuses. And now we've got this really chaotic, ramshackle process where they've come up with what they say is a plan. Already there are very serious questions being asked by a range of people and interests who are potentially affected. But more importantly, they're proposing a really terrible process to try and ram this through the Parliament in one day without letting Parliament do the job it's supposed to do, which is to investigate what the government's proposing and determine whether it agrees or not. So it's really treating the Parliament as a rubber stamp. That's a very bad thing to do.
It is a bad thing to do. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. We might catch up again later in the week, see how this all goes. Thank you, Paul. Paul Fletcher, the Manager of Opposition Business. Let's check tech with the techno bloke Tim Stackpole, who joins us on a regular basis. You can look up all Tim's information on thetechnobloke.com. Google searches, can you individually work out what you've searched most often for yourself?
Oh, Steve, I don't know whether I've actually tried to track that down. You've given me a bit of a challenge. I'm going to give that a go
idea.
When I get back to the office. Yeah, I'm not sure if you can, but I mean, it's coming up to the end of the year, of course, so you get all these listicle articles come out, Steve, and interesting that Google actually published what are the most popular searches generally that have taken place in Australia. Of course, the number one was regarding Wordle, that word game, Steve, which kind of captivated us for many months. I think you and I talked about it quite a lot. And second to that was searches for the Australian Open, if you can believe
that. I find
that
unusual.
Yeah, I think it must have been, the competition must have been fairly tight and interesting. I can't recall exactly whether there was a lot of controversy, but Wordle, the word game, the sport, the Australian Open, and the third one, Steve, not so surprisingly, was words along the line of, when is it going to stop raining?
That's pretty understandable, particularly if you lived in Sydney.
Yeah, well, that's right. And you guys, you know, did plenty of coverage regarding the floods as well. So not so surprising there. But, yeah, Wordle on Australian and Australian Open, the top two searches in Australia for 2022, Steve.
I suspect the Australian Open was because of Novak Djokovic and the fact that he was detained at Melbourne Airport. Then he was locked up in detention and then deported from the country.
Yeah,
so I guess
absolutely.
That's what it was. And also, if you think back on it, it's hard to remember back to January, the Special Ks, Nick Kyrgios and Kokkinakis were setting the world on fire with their double act, and so people were probably searching that as well. But it's not surprising that people said, when's it going to stop to rain? It'd be interesting to see how many people put into Google, what can I do when my house is attacked by rising damp after the rain as well?
Yeah, how do you stop the mould? What are the solutions to mould all over the walls too, Steve? A bit of vinegar, I think, helps for that.
One of the solutions to mould is air purifiers. What's Dyson done in that space?
This one we thought was an April Fool's joke, Steve, because they announced it on April Fool's Day. It's actually a pair of wireless headphones, quite big they are, but along the front of your face, Steve, is an air purifier. It kind of looks something out of sci-fi, very Star Wars-like, and we thought this was a big joke, but it is going on sale in the US in January, not cheap, about $950 US. So we're looking close to $1,500 in Australia. But it is a personal air filtration device that you wear on your head. to be honest, you are going to look a bit silly walking around a supermarket with it on. But considering like the bushfires and the amount of smoke haze we've had throughout the communities over the past year, Steve, you know, maybe this is something worth considering. It does purify air, but it does look ridiculous on your head, I have to admit.
Might help with COVID, though.
Yeah, well, that sort of thing too. I mean, I don't know how much that can be guaranteed, Steve, and I don't know whether, you know, the filters actually filter out viruses, certainly particles the size of smoke it would do, but a ridiculous-looking contraption. But, yeah, I think, you know, in the comfort of your own home, the privacy of your own home, it may be something you'd consider wearing, Steve.
Not cheap.
No, but as I say, $1,500. Don't know when it's going to go on sale in Australia, but we certainly know the price in the US, $950. And you know, Jim Dyson, you know, doesn't cut corners when it comes to design, so probably worth every cent of that, Steve. But again, look, you know, it plays music, it's got headphones on, it does have practical application, and if it blows pure air into your face, well, all well and good.
If I'm going to buy a Dyson, it'll be a vacuum cleaner, nothing else. Now, Twitter, I'm still on Twitter. I don't know that Elon's caused me too many dramas, but I am on Twitter still. But there are competing platforms that are going to try and cash in on the dislike of what Elon's done to Twitter.
Yeah, and of course we know Elon could change his tune at any time. You know, he can flick this thing around as he likes at the moment. But, of course, the regular players like Meta, who own Facebook, they're thinking about coming along with an alternative to Twitter. There's another service called Posts. Mastodon, which is kind of like a social network, Steve. It doesn't have a centralized point. That's proved to be kind of popular at the moment, but it's not monetized. It's called open source. So that has a few hurdles to get over. Hive Social's been around for a while, and maybe Tumblr will make a bit of a comeback, Steve, here as well. These are all the rumors we're hearing about people wanting to fill the space that's being left by those who are leaving Twitter, Steve. So it'll be a very interesting 12 months to come, I think.
What's Tumblr? Why do I remember that name?
Well, it was a very early social network where you could share photos and comments, but it did get kind of overtaken by Facebook and Twitter, especially when, you know, the big corporations came in and kind of scooped them up. Tumblr kind of got bought and then left behind and that sort of thing. Development was a bit slow. Some people still use it. But you know, it does need something like a Twitter reincarnation to kind of put fire back in its belly, Steve.
I think I'll stick with Twitter for the moment. Thank you, Tim. Good on you, mate. Thanks a lot. Tim Stackpole, the Techno Bloke. You can look up his information at thetechnobloke.com. It's been a very heavy morning with that tragedy that unfolded around 4 o'clock in the afternoon in Queensland yesterday. Our thoughts go to those brave young police officers who were brutally murdered. I'll come back and talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Australia Today podcast. For more of the stories that matter, search Australia Today on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Listener.